it shows you how weak they are. They can't talk to the Lebanese population and such. This propaganda doesn't work anymore. And they're addressing their master. And the funny part is that this is happening during the American defeat, withdrawal from Afghanistan,
true,
with those historic images that we saw. And so, you know, they can bark, but their master is not going to come to help them because they will not risk something worse than Afghanistan.
Well, they were actually beaten up word-wise, verbally, by the American ambassador who reprimanded her NGO representatives as a result of the utter failure of the August 4th and the August 4th plan for Lebanon. And she reiterated her request to focus on the danger of Hezbollah. And these are talking points coming out of the meeting that she had. I'm not making this up. You can find it in Lebanese media. Unfortunately, we may witness many events that reflect this American understanding of chaos, such as bloody confrontations in more than one Lebanese region, especially regions where it's mixed with different sects, or maybe motorized media campaigns, or even judicial procedures, in addition to great pressures to prevent Lebanon from obtaining any kind of direct or indirect support unless it is controlled by the West. In 1 minute, is Lebanon on the brink of war, or has the U.S. completely lost Lebanon?
Look, the response of the ambassador came after the speech on Friday when Sayyid Nasrallah announced the coming of the first ship. We've moved past that. So everything that she's done is useless now because already by Sunday, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah announced a second ship on the way and also raised the stakes and said there is oil and gas in the waters, territorial waters of Lebanon, and if the international companies that the United States controls are not willing to extract, that they will bring Iranian companies to do so. So,
well, this has got to bring out media frenzy, and I'm just looking forward to what will happen during this week when the ship actually arrives. I want to thank you very much, Laith Maarouf, political commentator and senior media consultant, for being with us and discussing this. I will be willing to discuss this more with you when the frenzy touches a new level. Thank you for being with us. Please stay tuned next week for more from the Middle East Stream.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Did women also play a role in the event of Ashura, April 21st, 2010? The greatness of Zainab al-Kubra's movement is reflected in what is left of her sermons. Her brother, her imam and leader, had been martyred in a desert just 2 days before. Her dear ones, her children, and many other people had been martyred. She and tens of other women and children were taken captive on the same day. They were paraded in different places. Some of the people who were watching them were cheerful and some were shedding tears. Zainab, peace be upon her, suddenly started her great mission in that critical situation. She spoke like her father did when he was delivering a sermon to his people during his rule. She spoke with the same tone. She spoke using the same kind of words Imam Ali would use. She was equally eloquent and precise, and her words were equally profound.
Ana mazlum Hussain, ana mazlum Hussain, ana mazlum Hussain, ana mazlum Hussain, ana latshan.
Imam Hussain, peace be upon him, made the army of reason overcome the army of ignorance.
O plotters and pretenders, maybe you yourselves were starting to believe that you were following Islam and the Holy Prophet's household, but you failed miserably in the test. You proved to be blind in the fitna. Do you pledge allegiance while you are planning a conspiracy? You can do nothing but engage in shifting allegiance, hypocrisy, flattery, self-humiliation, and empty talk. Your actions were different from your words. You became arrogant and wrongly thought that you were pious. You thought you were still revolutionary. You thought you were still the followers of the commander of the faithful. But the truth was something else. You were not able to deal with the fitna. You were not able to save yourselves. You ruined everything you had done before. Because of your lack of insight, your lack of knowledge of the situation, and your inability to distinguish right from wrong, you ruined everything you had built. You look faithful and you keep making revolutionary claims, but deep down you are empty and weak.
After 5 days of marathon debates in Parliament over the credentials of President Raisi's cabinet choices, the final voting was held. All but one of the 19 proposed ministers won the Parliament's confidence. Parliament gave no confidence to Hossein Barghouti, the proposed education minister. With 76 votes in favor, 193 against, and 18 abstentions. In his address to Parliament, President Raisi said his cabinet will start its work as soon as the following day. He says he will not waste an hour to solve the country's problems.
After the vote of confidence is over, we will kickstart our activities with the new cabinet as of tomorrow. Our country is grappling with serious issues, and we must not waste even an hour to address them. Issues such as the fight against the coronavirus and the need to speed up nationwide vaccination will be on top of our agenda.
The ministers of defense, foreign affairs, and intelligence were among the nominees with the highest votes. Lawmakers say this signals that Parliament shares the same approach with the government over foreign policy and national security.
This is meaningful. It shows that Parliament will support the plans of the new ministers. And as the President says, the new cabinet will work throughout the day to solve the problems of the country.
Ebrahim Raisi handed his proposed cabinet lineup to Parliament 2 weeks ago, a week after he took the oath of office as Iran's new president. Legislators then started reviewing the credentials of the proposed ministers behind closed doors for a week, and in the open sessions for the past 5 days. With just one nominee dropping out of the list, it seems that the new government will not face serious friction with Parliament in its job. Raisi now has 3 months to introduce a new name for education minister, and until then, a caretaker will be appointed to run the ministry. Yusuf Jalali from Iran's Parliament.
Thousands of Palestinians were injured in a protest east of the city of Khan Yunis in the Gaza Strip, where Israeli army fired live bullets and tear gas on protesters who came calling for an end to the blockade imposed by Israel. The mass protest organized by Islamic and National Forces comes as a part of the popular resistance activities that demands giving Palestinians their rights and allow the reconstruction of the Gaza Strip after the latest escalation.
Palestinians came here to stress the importance of the popular resistance with all means. They also demanded their human rights and called for an end to the blockade imposed for 15 years now. Palestinians are only calling for their rights to live with dignity. Israeli regime should be aware that the resistance will support its people and it will force the Israeli regime to accept the Palestinians' demands.
Palestinian factions warned the Israeli regime in a press conference during the rally that they won't accept any delay in the reconstruction process and ending of the crippling siege imposed for 15 years that provoked Palestinians' anger, stressing that the Israeli policies won't break the Palestinian willingness.
The Israeli crimes against Palestinians have led them to come here to voice their anger. The Israeli regime must end the blockade and the Gaza Strip. Palestinians will keep to resist against the occupation regime.
Earlier, Palestinians held a similar protest where an Israeli soldier was critically injured and dozens of Palestinians were shot in clashes with the Israeli army. These protests held by Palestinians aimed to expose the Israeli crimes amid the silence of the international community.
We call for an end to this suffocating blockade that has deteriorated our lives. This protest aims to find a way out of our misery. This condition is unacceptable. International community must give Israel a punishment for its crimes here.
Tensions along the separation fence are still ongoing as Palestinian protesters here came to express their refusal of the Israeli blockade and demand allowing the reconstruction of Gaza following an 11-day escalation. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
A special relationship, a term coined after the Second World War by then-British Prime Minister Winston Churchill to describe his country's close bilateral ties with former colony the U.S., from economic to cultural to military. Decades later, that supposed strong bond seems to exist in all but name.
It was never special. We already discussed the Suez crisis where the U.S., you know, basically told Britain to get out of the way, slapped it aside like a little child, a recalcitrant child. Tony Blair was the last British Prime Minister who really put a lot of political capital into this so-called special relationship. The price has been thousands of British soldiers killed, over 457 in Afghanistan alone.
Successive U.S. presidents have dealt serious blows to this transatlantic alliance, from Ronald Reagan, who ordered the invasion of Grenada, a Commonwealth country, when Margaret Thatcher was at number 10, the supposed acme of this special relationship, all the way to Trump and now Biden, who ordered the Afghanistan pullout without consulting the UK.
It gives lie to the idea that there ever was a special relationship. It only existed in the deluded minds of British mandarins and British political elites because they felt they still wanted to feel that Britain was a great power, and that they, even though they didn't have an empire, they still retained an empire state of mind. and that has now been blown right out of the water with the fall of Afghanistan.
In a sign of heightened tensions, the reaction from a man who got the UK involved in US-led wars in Afghanistan and later Iraq, and is a great believer in the special relationship. He has called Biden's decision imbecilic.
A policy can't be decided by slogan. It's got to be decided on the basis of a strategy. And that's a different thing. And that's really the purpose of what I was saying.
With or without a strategy, it's happening. As U.S. troops evacuate defeated, so must their British peers. Just as they went into the country in September 2001. The Taliban have ruled out any extension of the occupation.
If they are intent on continuing the occupation, so it will provoke a reaction.
The exit from Afghanistan is a chaotic one, and the fury at number 10 over being ignored and humiliated is palpable, offering a window into the state of the UK-US relations.
Theirs is a special relationship perennially skewed in Washington's favor, and where junior partner, the UK, plays the role of obedient sidekick. Saeed Pourriza, London.
The Russian President Vladimir Putin held a meeting with King Abdullah II of Jordan on the sidelines of the Army 2021 Forum. The monarch arrived in Russia not only to inspect new models of technology, but also to discuss the situation in Syria and Afghanistan. In his welcoming speech, the king said that Russia has always been the element of stability in the region, given the difficulties it faced.
But I think more important, as you alluded to, sir, is the challenges that we have in Syria, which you play, I think, the most stable role in being able to move that process forward. Again, your historic role on the Middle East peace process, having met the new Israeli government, I believe that we can be back to talking about how to improve the lives of the Palestinians. But again, with the strong role that you played in that particular aspect, the chance of maybe getting the Israelis and Palestinians at least start talking to each other.
Experts believe this means that Russia is again expected to play a similar role. The monarch is one of the influential U.S. allies in the Middle East, and his words could have weight in the White House.
The situation in the Syrian province of Daraa is important now for Jordan, which wanted security assurances and hope for a stabilization of the situation in the area. I think that the Russian side has provided clarifications regarding Russia's position on this issue. Another important topic of the talks was the military technical community, Palestine, and the situation in Afghanistan, where both countries can successfully interact.
King Abdullah is the first Middle Eastern leader to meet with Putin after the Taliban seizure of power. The king spoke about Afghanistan, noting that there are difficulties. He can be understood. The world still doesn't know how to deal with the Taliban and the takeover. On the eve of the meeting, Putin made it clear that he was seriously concerned about the situation with refugees from Afghanistan who might end up in Central Asia.
We have common borders with post Soviet republics and there are no visa restrictions. Imagine refugees enter any of these countries. Who are among these refugees? How do they know? There may be thousands or even hundreds of thousands of them, and maybe millions. And we have no visa restrictions with our closest allies and neighbors, and the border is 1,000 kilometers. And what are we going to do about it? This is directly related to the security of Russia. This is directly connected with our citizens.
On Monday, Putin discussed the situation in Afghanistan with the leaders of Belarus, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, and Armenia. They expressed concern about the presence of the Daesh terror group in Afghanistan.
Russia is not expected to interfere in the events in Afghanistan. It has not recognized the Taliban, but it has not evacuated its embassy staff. Moscow says it continues to monitor how events develop in this regard. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
The situation in the Afghan capital Kabul is getting worse as a big chaos is ongoing in and around Kabul International Airport. Thousands of Afghans rushed to Kabul International Airport only a day after Taliban took control of the capital Kabul almost a week ago.
This is a tragedy for every single Afghan national. The U.S. claims that it has spent $1 trillion in Afghanistan. No, They were not after making good governance system in our country. They were only after imposing the current situation on our people and Afghanistan.
Chaos in Kabul airport has so far resulted in the death of at least 20 Afghans, including women and children. The horrifying situation in and around Kabul International Airport has created a big chaos.
People had heard something about the evacuation of Afghan nationals by the US and other foreign troops from Kabul International Airport. So thousands of them gathered around the airport to get into it. But it was just a rumor because even many passport holders couldn't get into the airport.
This comes as the Taliban blamed the US forces for failing to bring the situation under control in the airport, an issue that, according to the Taliban, has led to the loss of civilian lives. Syed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
The hasty and chaotic U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan has rattled the idea that the South Korea-U.S. alliance is as, quote, ironclad, as diplomats say. Analysts suggest that the presence of U.S. forces here in South Korea serves U.S. interests, both in terms of deterring North Korea and for checking the expansion of China's influence. But those U.S. interests didn't prevent former U.S. President Donald Trump from threatening to remove U.S. forces from South Korea to force Seoul to pay more for hosting U.S. troops. South Korea has hosted tens of thousands of U.S. troops on dozens of bases throughout the country since the 1950 to 53 Korean War. As a U.S. ally, Seoul is expected to participate in U.S. missions abroad. Security policy analyst Lee Tae-ho argues South Korea's automatic participation in U.S. conflicts is unjustified.
The National Assembly's approval to dispatching troops to Afghanistan and Iraq indicates that South Korea participates in such wars to support American counterterrorism warfare. And unfortunately, the Korean government does not provide any official evaluation afterward.
For South Korea, the U.S. failure in Afghanistan provides lessons to the South Korea-U.S. alliance and its strategy of entering and occupying North Korea, if and when Pyongyang is no longer in control.
Even though military forces from all over the world took part, it only showed that taking one country by force is not sustainable. For us, it implies that the current military plan between South Korea and U.S. of invading North Korea when it becomes unstable is in fact unrealistic.
He also suggests the South Korea case is different from Afghanistan, as this country has its own advanced military to deter North Korea, although more emphasis needs to be given to negotiations with Pyongyang. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Pro-Palestine activists in England have caused major disruption once again for Israeli arms manufacturer Elbit Systems in Oldham on Monday, after members of the Palestine Action Group occupied one of Elbit's buildings in an attempt to halt the firm's activities. Press TV arrived on location just hours after the stunt was launched.
This isn't the first time that this particular facility has been targeted by Palestine Action, and the group say that they will continue to target sites like this until there is a significant change for the Palestinian issue. Now, they have claimed that they have a long queue of future potential activists lining up to conduct this type of action, and that's because there are many, many people in the general public that feel as if they want to do more for Palestine, and they seem to have reached the conclusion that they have little alternative but to do radical action like what we see taking place behind me in order to force the issue.
As well as occupying the roof, some activists blocked the main road, while others smashed windows before smearing the building in red paint. The colour symbolises the blood of Palestinians killed in Gaza.
These people are saying, here's pots of red paint, we want to stop arms. At some point in time, the arms trade will be as vilified as the slave trade was a couple of hundred years ago, and that's what we intend to achieve through this. Here behind us, many people don't even know it's Elbit because it used to be called Ferranti. It doesn't have a big Elbit sign up. It should have a big sign saying Elbit, killer of Palestinian children. That's the sign it should have outside.
Due to the illegal nature of these protests, the activists will be arrested, some already carted off as we arrived. The activists also risk fines, lengthy court battles, and possible jail time. Yet, they keep coming back.
No, Elbit is going to close this factory. I give you that as a promise. Elbit's profits are what we want to hit. Elbit as an organisation we want to hit. Elbit will go away because there is enough protest from the communities of this country outside of its factories to say, we do not want your bombs. We want to free Palestine.
Oldham's site is used to manufacture specialist military products, which have been used in successive Israeli attacks on Gaza. So, while Gaza remains besieged, Palestine Action vows to continue, as they put it, occupying the occupiers. Robert Carter, Oldham.
In an interview with the Al-Khanadiq website, the head of Yemen's negotiating delegation for peace, Mohammed Abdusalam, said the UK presence on Yemen's soil is not new, and Yemenis reject any form of foreign presence on their land, and it is their right to fight those who come to invade the country militarily.
Since the beginning of the war, Yemeni people have rejected the foreign presence in any form and cannot accept that. We have made great sacrifices for our freedom and independence and to clean our land from foreign forces. Today, the world is following what is happening in Al-Mara Governorate. People of Yemen cannot accept the Saudi British occupation of Al-Mara, and we have come to the conviction that armed struggle is necessary to expel foreign forces, whether in Al-Mara or elsewhere.
Regarding the developments in Marib, Abdusalam said the liberated areas from forces backed by the Saudi-led military coalition in the Western Governorate are equal to the size of two Persian Gulf states. The chief negotiator added that battles are still going on in Marib and other fronts. He said the recent initiative offered by Yemen's Ansarullah movement is the key to end the war that the coalition started against Yemen in 2015, but Saudis have no real intentions to move politically. However, he noted that the initiative is still in force.
The other party must accept the initiative presented by Ansarullah because it establishes a comprehensive political solution. The other party will regret it if they didn't respond to this initiative because it aims to stop the war completely and end the suffering of Yemenis. Unfortunately, Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates are the ones who have the power to decide, and we are ready to talk with the Yemeni parties if they have enough courage to take action by themselves.
Recently, the Saudi-led coalition has intensified its air raids on Marib in what experts describe as a desperate attempt to back the Saudi-backed forces on the ground as the Yemeni army keeps marking new advances toward the city of Marib.
Experts believe that Ansarullah has the upper hand as the Yemeni army keeps advancing toward the city of Marib. They say Ansarullah's initiative is a great opportunity for Riyadh to get rid of the quagmire it's stuck with its war on Yemen. Abdullah Gloshali, Sana.
Seoul Metropolitan Government's Yongsan City Memorial Exhibition Hall is holding an exhibit, July 16th, Yongsan. It shows footage for the first time in South Korea of the July 16th, 1950 U.S. bombing of Yongsan, Central Seoul's district, which killed hundreds of civilians.
U.S. B-29 bombers sent to destroy military targets like Yongsan Station switchyard also hit civilian buildings. 3 weeks before, on June 25th, the Korean War had broken out and North Korean forces had crossed the 38th parallel, capturing Seoul just 3 days later.
The footage obtained from the U.S. National Archives and Records Administration shows bombs being dropped and bodies strewn on the ground. Videos and photos edited from it are organized under four themes to highlight wartime suffering and healing after the 1953 armistice.
The bombing killed at least 1,587 of Yongsan's 193,000 residents, and 47 B-29 bombers dropped some 1,500 bombs, as this bomber was highly inaccurate and had to drop many bombs.
The event draws many curious visitors from Seoul and Greater Seoul's smaller cities and towns.
I'm glad the footage was released. Forgetting this incident would be a tragedy. We should not ignore or hide an unexpectedly large number of civilian deaths an aerial bombing unintentionally caused.
West of Seoul in Incheon, General Douglas MacArthur's statue overlooks the port where he led the famed September 1950 landing that led to the South recovering Seoul.
Some people criticize him because he did not take, at least this is what they say, enough care to minimize civilian casualties during the bombing of Yongsan Station in 1950.
In his latest speech on the anniversary of Korea's liberation from Japan's colonial rule at World War II's end, the same day Korea was divided, the South's president urged inter-Korean peace, the exhibit's underlying message.
East and West Germany achieved unification after 45 years. Division is the biggest obstacle to our growth and prosperity, a tenacious barrier to permanent peace. Like Germany, we can remove it.
The exhibit, which opened recently on the anniversary of the bombing and will run at least until this year's end, serves as a powerful reminder war must never happen on the Korean Peninsula again. Jennifer Chang, Seoul.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the all-compassionate, the all-merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, which was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. As you know, last week we completed the explanation of Surah Fatih, and from this Friday onwards, we embark on explanation of the next surah, that is Surah Hujurat, which is 49th in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. It has 18 ayahs and was revealed in Medina. This surah, which takes its name from the word Hujurat, which is Arabic for apartments or chambers, criticizes as ill-mannered and uncouth those who would stand behind the apartments of the prophet's wives and call him forth for discourse with raised voices. The surah guides the believers on how to behave with proper respect towards their leader, as is clear in the opening ayah, and with mutual respect and trust towards each other, as stressed in ayah 9. It emphasizes the unity of mankind and God's intention that people should live together in harmony. It criticizes the desert Arabs for their presumptuous attitude to their faith and towards God. In short, the goal of this surah is to elucidate upon a series of life-giving commandments of akhlaq, which means ethics and morality, as well as social interaction, which, if put into practice, would lead an ideal civilization. These in turn could create and cultivate a pure society that is far removed from all sorts of blameworthy moral traits. Here we present you the first ayah of this surah, which reads,
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا لَا تُقَدِّمُوا بَيْنَ يَدَيِ اللَّهِ وَرَسُولِهِ وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ سَمِيعٌ عَلِيمٌ.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful, O you who have faith, do not venture ahead of Allah and His Prophet, and be wary of Allah. Indeed, Allah is all-hearing, all-knowing. This ayah addresses the believers and censures them for being presumptuous, since faith requires submission to the Almighty Creator and the instructions of the Prophet. This implies that no irreverence should be shown to either Allah or His Prophet in any matter. In other words, the believers must be mannerly, decorous, and showing reverence in the presence of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. It is not allowed to give advice in any matter before the Prophet asks a believer to do so, if he pleases. Judgment or verdict is given by Allah in all matters through his messenger, so the believers should obey the Prophet as the appointee of God Almighty. This ayah was revealed when some ill-mannered Muslims showed disrespect to the Prophet by their behavior, thereby weakening the authority of the leader of Islamic community. From this ayah we learn that, number one, disobedience of God and the Prophet includes indulgence in forbidden things and forbidding those things allowed by the religion. Number two, the laws of the Islamic society should be based on God's revelation, the Noble Quran, and the Prophet's Sunnah and Sirah, that is, behavior and practice. Number three, any law that is against the letter and the spirit of the Noble Quran and the Sunnah is deemed un-Islamic, and therefore null and void. And number four, those who involve their personal choices in matters pertaining to the governance of the Islamic society have indeed distanced from faith and God-weariness. Now we listen to ayahs 2 and 3 of Surah Hujurat.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu la tarfa'u aswatakum fawqa sawtin nabiyyi wa la tajharu lahu bil qawli ka jahri ba'dikum li ba'din an tahbata a'malukum wa antum la tash'urun. إن الذين يغضون أصواتهم عند رسول الله أولئك الذين امتحن الله قلوبهم للتقوى لهم مغفرة وأجر عظيم.
O you who have faith, do not raise your voices above the voice of the Prophet, and do not speak loud to him as you shout to one another, lest your works should fail without your being aware. Indeed, those who lure their voices in the presence of the Prophet of Allah, they are the ones whose hearts Allah has tested for God-weariness. For them will be forgiveness and a great reward. Here God commands the believers not to raise their voices or speak loudly in the presence of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Those who do not observe social conduct in the presence of the Prophet will not get any benefit from their good deeds. One is not supposed to show such indecency before one's parents and teachers either. The next ayah makes a reference to the pious whose characteristics includes speaking softly in the presence of the Prophet and never raising their voices above that of the Prophet. It means the Prophet's exalted state and grandeur of his immaculate personality have penetrated their hearts. Divine reward and forgiveness are in store for such people. These ayahs teach us the following. Number one, we should be careful of our way of speaking, since good and evil deeds have consequences even though we do not know. Number two, there are some hypocrites who appear humble in their outward behavior, while they are haughty inwardly. Number three, the true believers are full of reverence towards the Prophet and never show any disrespect to him. Number four, a true believer is generous to his or her fault, and on becoming aware of such flaws, repents and seeks forgiveness. Now let us listen to ayahs 4 and 5 of this surah.
إن الذين ينادونك من وراء الحجرات أكثرهم لا يعقلون ولو أنهم صبروا حتى تخرج إليهم لكان خيرا لهم والله غفور رحيم.
O Prophet, indeed those who call you from behind the apartments, most of them do not apply reason. Had they been patient till you came out for them, it would have been better for them, and Allah is all forgiving, all merciful. Here God says that when the Prophet was at home, some of the uncultured Arabs would not be patient until he came out and would call him loudly near to the apartments or private quarters that he had allotted to his wives. Thus, God Almighty defines social decorum as an important aspect of Islam. These ayahs teach us that, number one, Islam attaches high status to social codes of conduct to the extent that impoliteness is considered as a sign of lack of reasoning. Number two, the house and family are considered a sanctuary, hence no one has the right to disturb their peace with loud voices. And number three, social responsibilities should not prevent Muslims from their family affairs.
Taliban today.
As the Taliban return to power in Afghanistan like never before, Iran adapts its stance by accepting them, but with a mindful eye. Iran's approach towards Afghanistan's turmoil will be our study of the day. Recent developments in Afghanistan have emerged over a mosaic social and political infrastructure. Before anything, Iran calls for inter-Afghan relations and participation by all political factions, all building tiles, in solving their country's many problems. But where called upon, this country will help. The question is how. For more, stay with me, Leila Faromarzi, on Iran Today. And in what capacity, actually? For some, help means taking up arms or sending in military consultants. And those skeptical of the Taliban ask why Iran is not taking action against the Taliban, because the Taliban threatened to attack Iran up to 20 years ago. Iran, they say, was the most advanced regional force in destroying Daesh. So how did it not take action against the Taliban, as though the life of the people of Afghanistan is less worthy than the lives of the people of Iraq and Syria? Mr. Zohrevand was ambassador to Afghanistan and Italy. He visited Press TV studios to give us a concise, comprehensive interview. Some point to Iran's presence in Syria and Iraq and say, why not Afghanistan? Well, the thing is, the Afghan government hasn't asked for our presence, right? I mean, if we just turn up there, we're acting like Americans.
The nature of our presence in Iraq and Syria is such that the governments of those countries saw some alignment in the threats and opportunities for themselves and us. And that's why we went there, by governmental demand. The result was also positive, meaning that if any of the countries were left alone, maybe the political maps would have had to be redrawn. Our stance regarding Iraq has been different. The former Afghan government never asked us for assistance or cooperation. That's why we maintained the same relations with Afghanistan as we did with some of our neighbors.
In recent years, Iran has not provided arms or financial assistance to the parties involved in Afghanistan so as not to be accused of defending one side. Indeed, Iran tends not to enter militarily or send consultants into a country without the request of the legitimate government of that country. And so, according to this strategy, it will not enter Afghanistan at this stage either. On July the 7th, Iran hosted talks between Taliban and Afghan government representatives in its capital city, Tehran. The Rouhani foreign minister, Javad Zarif, used the meeting to celebrate the U.S. departure from Afghanistan, whilst warning that continuing clashes between Taliban fighters and the Afghan government would be costly. The U.S. military exit from Afghanistan was due to be completed by August the 31st, which is now to be extended. In the meantime, Iranian policymakers are strategizing about their future approach toward Afghanistan. This is a far cry from how things were 20 years ago and more. The attack on the Iranian consulate by the Taliban and the killing of Iranian diplomats was the culmination of hostilities at the time. The Taliban claimed that this was the case. Iran defended its anti-Taliban actions at the time, but even then refused to enter the country. Maulavi Khairullah, a Taliban political office member, did a face-to-face with Press TV. Here's a little of what he said. Mr. Zari is an analyst and former diplomat who draws on background in looking at matters current. Let's hear him out.
We reached an agreement based on old agreements, which could go back 100 years, over the Helmand River waters.
but we haven't been able to use the water for the past 20 years. This has had a negative impact on the economy of Sistan and Balochistan and South Khorasan provinces. To solve the issue, we need to engage in negotiations. There are other instances, like economic ties. We have $3.6 billion worth of currency transactions with Afghanistan. This can reach a $10 billion mark in a couple of years, which would both benefit the people of Afghanistan and the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Iran first needs security in Afghanistan, and it looks to, hopes for, the peaceful means to this. That's all Afghan factions reaching an understanding among themselves. On Sunday, August the 15th, after Kabul was taken by the Taliban, the then Iranian Foreign Minister Zarif welcomed the formation of a coordination council. That's remembered as Iran's first major reaction. We hope that it can lead to dialogue and a peaceful transition in Afghanistan, Zarif tweeted, as violence, war, and occupation never solve problems. The slightest insecurity equals the Afghans rushing to Iran. In fact, Iran suffers the most from any insecurity in Afghanistan compared to other countries.
How do you evaluate Iran's stance toward Afghanistan? Has it jumped ship, or is it naturally acting in favor of its own national interests?
Today, as the developments in Afghanistan show that the former government is gone and that the Taliban is taking over the country, we will continue to use our 20-year-long relations with the Taliban to stabilize the security and political situation of Afghanistan. This is both to the benefit of the Afghan nation and in line with the national interests of Iran.
The Taliban have their own incentives for relations with Iran. They would not want to risk alienating this country. In short, conflict with Iran is bad for business. The Iran-Afghanistan border includes several lucrative trade routes. And beyond differences, both Iran and the Taliban share an ideological antipathy towards the United States and the West, largely speaking.
Afghanistan ki di khalak rozili wa Afghanistan ki da amniyat ra wasalai su aw ne hum da su gochi da imarat fa ulan ba yaqi kum taqaddum pida kai su jang di baghair da din shi khasara wo shi dwar tara po to is fayda fur murata banas kisi ke bakhana ye jagah dakhil mesha sahib khana me jang ta wo ki zinda masha chala ke bigana bakhana is amada agar baz me gardan hamu masala hamu ne scenario ki 20 sal guzasht hamu takrar mesha wa na pishina pa ina mera sana pa ma mera.
For Iran, the benefits of a good Tehran-New Taliban ties are less obvious. Iran did also have excellent contacts and significant influence, however, with Afghanistan's Hamid Karzai and Ashraf Ghani governments.
Yes, some people are asking in Iran why we didn't strongly support the democratic government of former Afghan President Ashraf Ghani. They demand that we endanger the status of the Islamic Republic to throw our weight behind a government that doesn't have any roots, powers, legitimacy, or popularity. It was called a democratic government, but I don't know how it could be regarded as such. Only 1.8 million people participated in the Afghan elections 2 years ago. This is while over 20 million voters have been eligible to cast their ballots in the 40 million strong nation. What type of democracy is that? And this so-called democratic government never showed any cooperation with the Islamic Republic of Iran. Over the past few years, they have been ignoring our rights to the Helmand River.
Looking at the Taliban's recent promises and governing doctrine, the group has rationalized with experience gained over the years. But its past does echo a cautionary tale. Thousands of Afghans are already heading to Iran for fear of a radical interpretation of Islam. For Iran's part, I asked if the Taliban, after convincing all sides of its inclusiveness and peaceful intentions, might not get ideas about reviving a greater Khorasan or sowing discord between Iran's southeastern Sistan-Baluchistan province and the rest of the country.
Well, when considering foreign policy, the future can't be foretold. Our situation with the Taliban is such that we have had relations and agreements. The Taliban maintain that they remain committed to their obligations and are carrying them out. For example, the Helmand River is now flowing inside Sistan and Balochistan plains. They are saying they are committed. Therefore, there is no indication that the Taliban will turn into a security issue in the future. Hypothetically, if this is the case, we'll decide our next steps then. We are not a weak country. We can repel any aggression.
time for a short break. We'll be back in no time.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Plenty more to be said, but first a quick media review with Sarah on Afghan refugees to Iran, past and potential, and on what's positive about the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan.
Hello and welcome to another edition with me, Sarah Adema. Today we will look into some reviews regarding the Taliban's return to power and Iran's say in this matter. Our first piece of news comes from the Middle East Eye that begins with the headline, Afghanistan says Iranians look on with apprehension at crisis next door. Ever since the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan 42 years ago, Iranians have been living alongside Afghan refugees and immigrants, and many in the country see the fall of Kabul as yet another dark chapter in the neighboring country's contemporary history. But the recent crisis in Afghanistan has brought a renewed debate in Iran. Should the country keep its doors closed to refugees amid its fifth wave of the COVID-19 pandemic and an economy strained by years of U.S. sanctions, or should solidarity prevail? After the monarchy collapsed in Iran, which was replaced by an Islamic Republic, Ayatollah Khomeini ordered the opening of the borders of Afghan refugees. While many Afghans initially landed in Iran's eastern provinces near the border, many went on to settle across the country. However, not all Iranians share the same sentiment about a potential influx of new Afghan refugees, especially those who live in regions already home to many of the country's 3 million Afghan residents. Moving on to the next review that comes from the Organization for World Peace, it reads, Iran says U.S. defeat in Afghanistan offers chance for peace. Iran State TV quoted President Ebrahim Raisi as saying, America's military defeat and its withdrawal must become an opportunity to restore life, security, and durable peace in Afghanistan. He continued, Iran backs efforts to restore stability in Afghanistan, and as a neighboring and brother nation, Iran invites all groups in Afghanistan to reach a national agreement. Barring intervention, Afghanistan is poised to collapse under the wheel of Taliban rule or erupt into a violent civil war. Neither outcome bodes well for Afghanistan's neighbors nor Afghan civilians. It is incumbent upon Iran and Pakistan, two nations with significant investment in the stability of Afghanistan, to exert their influence and immediately initiate and facilitate peace talks between the Taliban and Afghanistan's remaining government. Both Iran and Pakistan have expressed that a power-sharing agreement is their ideal outcome for Afghanistan's future. Additionally, international organizations, including the North Atlantic Treaty Organizations and the United Nations, need to closely monitor Afghanistan for human rights abuses during this uncertain transitions. Our final review from Tehran Times says, Refugees seek asylum in Iran as Taliban takes over in Afghanistan. As former Afghan President Ashraf Ghani fled his country and ceded power to the Taliban, Iran's eastern borders have seen an unabated influx of Afghans who seek a new life in Iran. Some used to be wealthy businessmen who have lost their positions in the conflict, and others are simply concerned about the future of their children. But all wind up here in this camp, where they have to wait for a decision by Iranian authorities whether to let them in or send them back to their country. Iran's border police have set up makeshift